Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Megan Culp, along here with Scott Micklin.
Good morning. It is Thursday, September 10th.
It is.
Week, who knows?
26, I think.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
Because we were 25 last week.
Yes. And we're all messed up because we weren't here Monday.
We weren't here Monday. I know.
Who are you? Right. What am I doing here?
I'm Scott. You're Megan. But yeah, so week 26. So this is the official, actually halfway point of the pandemic, I guess. We're at 6 months.
Yes. 26, well, week assuming 26, that it
from
ends.
When we started.
Okay.
I guess.
That's well, it's a halfway point
say, of a year.
Of a year.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Let's hope it doesn't go past a year.
Right, right. Well, we're hopeful, right? Because there's some interesting news that we'll talk about today.
Yes.
We also have a special guest. Dr. Paul Davis is going to be talking with me because you were on assignment again. You are really getting stuff done. I appreciate
was, actually.
That.
I was working with the sick.
Yeah, that's good. So, just stay over there.
I had
okay.
full on.
Good. Your PPE, thing. You're good to go.
100%.
Nice.
Intense stuff.
Okay.
Could hardly see my face.
But I'm going to talk to Dr. Paul Davis, who is with the San Juan Regional Spine Center. And so interesting conversation with him. But let's start with the numbers, mm-hmm. like we do on these programs. And we can kind of give everyone an update. And, oh, there's confirmation of week 26. Thank you very much.
That's
we,
our faithful calendar
we appreciate
listener.
That. Yes. Very good.
Okay.
Another scratch on the wall. has been made.
Okay.
So here we are. Johns Hopkins,
yeah.
Where are we here? Let's see.
We are at U.S. confirmed cases, 6,363,729. U.S. confirmed deaths, 190,887, which actually is 10,000 deaths behind their projected.
Hmm. Okay. Well, your numbers are always a little bit off than my numbers on the
same
screen.
Website.
I don't know why your phone is
Hopkins.
Maybe 3 hours behind, I don't know.
It's
but
so weird.
Anyway.
Okay, sorry.
That's okay.
Because I'm at the JHU, Johns Hopkins University Coronavirus Resource Center, as are you.
Right.
You're at the dashboard.
I don't understand it.
I'm going to send them an email today.
What is going on with your
service?
Apple phone over there?
Excuse me? Okay.
I don't know. I'll blame the phone.
Really?
Johns Hopkins.
I was going to blame the university.
Oh, well, all right. Well, you may have some more standing with them, so try it.
Mm.
Yeah. Anyway. So we're at about 190,000
okay.
deaths in the United States and about 6.3 million cases, followed by, we can see that 4.4 million cases in India, 4.1 million cases in Brazil, 1 million cases in Russia. So we are at the top of that heap.
Which is sad because both India and China have more people than us.
Right. That's true.
Anyway.
And we can see, again, the daily case numbers in that graph kind of in the lower right-hand side do show kind of a declining trend in the United States, which is a good thing.
That is a good
thing.
So
we always like to point that out as well, everybody. So that's where we are. Some of the other numbers that we want to talk about, too, this morning would be from San Juan County because they give us kind of the local numbers that are averaged and give us a pretty good view of what we're looking at. And so this is the latest graph from San Juan County. Again, they are compiling these. And these are the average cases for the state, the county, and the Navajo Nation. So the state is the red line at the top. San Juan County is the blue line at the bottom. The Navajo Nation is the green line in the middle. But we can see, obviously, they're all plummeting.
They're all declining, yeah.
Which is good.
Of course, yeah. And
I'm hopeful, fingers crossed, that 2 weeks after Labor Day, we will continue to see these same types of numbers. Hopefully, we won't see a spike from Labor Day activities.
Right, of course.
Hopefully,
especially since school has been pushed back to October. Maybe we'll get lucky. And
for some districts.
Right, Farmington, I know.
Farmington, but others are going back face to face, and so that is something to watch as well. So That's true. The other graph we want to show you again, San Juan County cases. Again, the yellow line is the number of cases. The blue line is the number of deaths here in the county. And so again, as we average those out, these are the numbers that we see. And so again, we can kind of see this decline in the yellow line, which is good. You know, we want to see that. And of course, the blue line is low as well. So that's a good thing as well.
Right. And we have our most recent local numbers, which we're getting to.
We will get those in just a second.
Okay, yes.
Yes, because...
Because they're in the single digits still, right?
They are.
Which has been the pattern for the past few weeks. I think 3 weeks now we've had single digit numbers, which is amazing. Stay the course. That's working. Whatever we're doing seems to be working. So
exactly. That's true. So hold on 1 second. I'm going to get these and refresh the page so we know we're showing you the most... newest.
I feel like we should highlight some numbers. Businesses that are doing a really good job with COVID safe practices. You want me to do that?
Sure.
Okay.
All right. Besides KSJE?
KSJE, of course. Okay. We spray this. I still smell the alcohol in the air. Rubbing alcohol.
Thank you. I was going to say, that's after the show.
No, because that would only be 10 a.m. A.
Wrong.
And B, neither one of us engaged. So
that's right. That's why it's funny.
Gosh. Olive Garden.
Okay.
This is where I was going.
All right.
Anyway, they've been stellar.
Okay.
I've only done curbside, but they're like full on garbed up.
Good.
That's okay. Good.
All right.
Great Clips. Also doing okay. A good job.
All right.
So thanks, guys. Keep it up.
A little insight into Megan's life away from the radio station, I think.
Very cheap haircuts. Hopefully they can't tell.
All right. Okay.
Numbers.
Anything else? Oh, that's it?
Well, now that they're pulled up. Well, I mean, I've only been to two businesses this week.
Okay.
I had gift cards from Olive Garden, and I was getting a little shaggy.
All right.
So.
Okay.
Thanks. Not like you, Mr. Perfect Hair.
Okay. Well, it takes a lot, you know, right? There's a lot going on over here. That's right. Okay.
Okay.
So in the state, the statewide number is again below 100.
Yeah.
Which again is another great thing. 92 new cases yesterday in New Mexico, 4 of those in San Juan County. So again, single digits, which has been the case pretty much for the last week or so. There were 6 additional deaths in New Mexico yesterday. None of those were in San Juan County, and about 227 new recoveries. For a total of about 13,928. So that's encouraging as well.
Yeah.
As we scroll down, and again, this is at KSJE.com, we can see the Navajo Nation numbers. And again, they had 12 new cases yesterday, but no additional deaths yesterday. There was a notable news from the Navajo Nation earlier this week is that for the first day since the pandemic began in March, 26 weeks ago, the Navajo Nation one day this week reported 0 new cases.
Excellent.
And so that was very encouraging. And again, we've seen these numbers on the Navajo Nation down in the single digits, low double digits. So again, I think they're heading in the right direction.
Yeah, that's really, really good news because that was obviously received national attention for how much of a
right.
Hotspot that was.
Exactly. So we're glad to see that. Again, next to that story is the story from New Mexico. Again, the additional cases here in San Juan County, which again, 4 new cases, no additional deaths in the county. And then that third story that I just want to point out, if you're a business owner in Farmington, Aztec, Bloomfield, Kirtland, or San Juan County, these entities have been given money through the state for local businesses to apply for to get reimbursed for some of their expenses due to COVID-19. So if you had to buy a bunch of face masks, had to buy a bunch of plastic or other things to set up your cash registers with or what have you, some of those expenses and more can be reimbursed through these grants that don't have to be paid back, by the way.
Right. I mean, that's the great thing about a grant.
That's right. So there you go. So I really encourage folks to, if you haven't already, to apply for these funds through these local entities. But you kind of have to do it based on where you're located. So if you're
yes.
a business in Kirtland, apply to Kirtland. If you're a business in Farmington, apply to Farmington.
Yes.
If you're in the county, apply to
and
the county.
And, of course, Carmen...
Martinez, Small
yes,
Business
thank
Development
you.
Center
yes.
here at San Juan College can help.
Can help you.
Direct you to
yes.
those different places. So there you go. So let's go to our guest, who is talking with me a little bit about his work at the San Juan Regional Spine Center, and then we'll come back and talk a bit more about some other stories that have been in the news.
About
spines.
COVID
and spines. There you go.
Okay.
Here we go. Joining me now to talk a little bit about his practice at the San Juan Regional Medical Center Spine Center, Dr. Paul Davis is joining us on the phone. Dr. Davis, good morning.
Good morning. Hi.
Thank you for being with us, and I appreciate you calling in this morning to talk a little bit about the work that you do and the procedures that you do, but it's somewhat timely because we're just hearing some news about some trials of a COVID-19 vaccine that have been kind of put on hold because apparently causing some problems with patients' spines in this testing group. And I know maybe you're not directly familiar with this study and these trials, but would you mind commenting a little bit about, you know, how this could happen or what could be going on with the spine and how it reacts to virus infections?
Well, the spine and the brain are generally fairly protected because of the blood-brain barrier from infections. But infections and inflammation open that up, and that can cause reactions or passage of infectious agents sometimes across the blood-brain barrier. Viruses could also cause a reaction or stimulation of the immune system that could cause an aseptic meningitis or just an inflammatory effect on the coverings, the meninges, the coverings around the brain or in the spinal fluid. I mean, there are some reports of encephalitis, in other words, true infections of the substance of the brain itself being caused by the COVID virus. So that certainly can happen. You can certainly have a reaction in any part of the body to something that's injected, dependent on the stimulation of the immune system.
Sure, understood. And so, and again, the more I learn about the human body, the more fascinated I am as to just how it protects itself and really tries to heal itself in some cases. And so talk to me a little bit about the work that you do at the San Juan Regional Spine Center. And I imagine you deal with some of this once in a while, but these types of things are fairly rare, right? These infections and some of these viral things that you're talking about?
Yes, thank you, Scott. Yeah, the COVID, you know, the cytokine storm and the types of things that happen that are very fulminant infections, as you know, are they're unusual things. I mean, generally it's a pulmonary effect of the virus because it's inhaled and it affects cells that are part of the lining of the respiratory system. But yeah, they can break out into other areas of the body and cause more fulminant inflammation or damage to those areas, and thankfully that tends to be less common than just the respiratory infection. But insofar as what we're doing, we've kind of returned to at San Juan Regional to elective activity,
right?
As of the end of July, and you know, we've been very cautious about that. We're testing within 48 hours for the presence of the virus or positivity of the antigen in anybody that comes in for any kind of care. And of course, the care of patients that come in for elective surgery, especially spinal surgeries, they're sequestered in a different part of the hospital, different operating room, different elevators are used, different floors of the hospital for the care of those patients, which are completely separated from the area where the COVID-19 patients are being cared for.
Understood. And so with that, are you seeing then more folks coming back to your practice with back trouble or things that you can help them with while this has been resumed?
Sure. We've been trying to get people to come back in. I think that, I've been proceeding with elective surgeries through July, through August, and, you know, all of that's been done safely. I mean, we haven't had, to my knowledge, I haven't had anybody that has contracted an infection of the virus, either the virus or any kind of infection, as a result of their surgical management or their admission. And we try very hard to get people out of the hospital as quickly as possible. In other words, I've actually sent some patients home same day from the recovery area, which is not usually my preference. I usually like to keep anybody that's had spinal surgery overnight in the hospital, just because they can have a reaction to the anesthetic, they can have pain, they can have nausea, and just having them stabilized before sending them home is preferential to me. There's a lot of pressure from insurance companies and the payers to try to get people out of the hospital as fast as possible, but I don't know that I entirely agree that meets the safety requirement that I think is paramount in my mind, which is to, you know, get people home when you think their pain control is good, they're eating, they feel like they can manage themselves at home. But, you know, we've been very cautious about both the admissions in terms of screening people, and we're trying to get people home as quickly as we can as well.
Sure. Well, that makes sense. And so talk to me a little bit about the kind of surgeries that you do at the spine center, because I know for folks who have back trouble and back pain, it can be very debilitating, and to get relief from that has got to be a life-changing experience.
Well, I would tell you that back pain, you know, pain that happens in the middle of the body, I wouldn't tell you that surgical management is really excellent at alleviating that. Mm. Most of the time, it's a person's core strength, their muscular support, that helps with that. But disc herniations or radicular pain, which is a fancy name for nerve pinching or pain that radiates into the arms or legs or difficulty with walking, what's called neurogenic claudication, which is a heaviness or numbness in the legs, which affects elderly people who have arthritic changes in their spine, those things are eminently treatable with spinal surgery. And that we try to do as minimally as possible. We do it minimally invasively when that technique can be used to disrupt the musculature and the supporting structures around the spine as little as possible, but alleviate any of the compression of the nerves that can be responsible for referred pain that's occurring. And that can happen as a result of generally disc herniations, injury, or just normal aging can cause the components of the spine to thicken, and that can impinge upon the spinal canal and compress nerve roots or compress the spinal cord. And of course, that can have far-reaching effects in the limbs and in the ability to ambulate that are alleviated by making those areas of the spine wider again.
I see. And so, but we've been hearing from physicians throughout the pandemic here that maybe folks have been opting not to go see their doctor, or if they have an ache or a pain, they maybe are just living with it. And again, until elective surgeries come back, which they now are here at San Juan Regional Medical Center. And so is that something you hear from your patients? Is that maybe they've waited a little longer than usual to come see you and ask you about that disc or whatever's going on?
Absolutely, Scott. I mean, there's some trepidation on the point, you know, for, wow, I don't want to get the infection because of the low chance that I could have complications with that. And that's a realistic view. But I think the way that we've been separating the patients and screening them, I think that risk is relatively low. And again, I've been performing elective surgeries since July, all of August, and I don't know of anyone who has become COVID positive as a result of their admission, or at least that hasn't been brought to my attention.
Right. We haven't heard of anything either, so I would agree with you on that, Dr. Davis. And so with these procedures that you do, I mean, this is a very specialized, at least in my thinking, specialized surgeries that you do here. And I imagine maybe there are folks that are surprised that this can be done here locally and they don't have to go out of town to find a doctor with your skills.
Well, yeah, about the only thing that I don't do here is scoliosis, you know, adolescent scoliosis. All the other types of spinal surgery can be performed here safely, depending, again, on the complexity and a person's underlying comorbidities, as long as that doesn't require a very high likelihood of critical care after the surgical management, and the vast majority of spinal surgeries do not. Those can be safely done here, and, you know, generally it's just an overnight stay for the vast majority of the types of spinal surgery that are done. Even fusion operations, which are done minimally invasively when those are required, those probably are on average the night of surgery and then the next day and night, so two nights in the hospital and then patients are home. And, you know, they don't have a tremendous amount of pain. They're ambulatory, they're taking oral medications, you know, they're walking, they're doing things, but they're certainly not back to a full level of activity, which takes a while to recover from, you know, dependent, again, upon what's done.
Sure. Right. And when folks get some of these things repaired, fixed, surgically assisted, that can also maybe ward off some other problems if they don't stay active or if they don't have these procedures done?
Well, sure. I mean, the more sedentary you are, the more that affects other systems of the body. And I'm thinking, you know, predominantly of your cardiac function, your pulmonary function. A lack of activity would potentially make you more susceptible to illness because your body then is weakened and not as able to fend off infections and, you know, keep those systems. And again, specifically your circulatory system, your respiratory system, basically when those are not healthy or they lose the reserve that they would normally have when somebody's in a high level of health or a high level of conditioning, they tend to be more susceptible to illness. And yeah, trying to get people back on their feet and back to, you know, more activity is, you know, certainly the objective of any kind of spinal surgery.
Indeed. And so, Dr. Davis, talk to us a little bit about the other procedures that you offer at the Spine Center that maybe folks may not be as familiar with. We've talked a little bit about some of the disc procedures that you can do for the spinal cord and things like that. But what are some of the other things that folks should know about?
Well, sure. There's all types of disc surgery, both in the neck, the cervical region, the lumbar region. You know, some of those do or do not require fusion, kind of fusing one segment of the spine to the other. That's done less often than just simple removal of tissues that are causing compression, be that a disc or thickening of the bone or ligament or a synovial cyst. I actually saw somebody just earlier today in the office who had that kind of problem. And we also do VCFs, vertebral compression fractures, with injection of methacrylate. It's a type of glue that's used to stabilize fractures. You know, there's then general neurosurgical things we also do. Those are also seen in the spine center, but we do general neurosurgical care, things like brain tumors. These are obviously not minimally invasive, but blood collections, subdurals, epidurals, those generally occur as traumatic things, but they can sometimes be seen as a chronic presentation where somebody's developed gradual confusion and a headache, and those are certainly cared for here on a routine basis as well.
Very good to know. And so for folks that are listening this morning, again, you've been practicing here for quite a while, right?
Now it's going on 2.25 years. I started in April of, 98? Yeah, so it's about 2.25 years now.
Okay, all right. 2018?
Right.
Is when you started. Well, great.
Correct.
Well, yep. Well, Dr. Davis, I appreciate your time this morning, and thank you for letting us know kind of some of the things that you do, your insights into this the COVID vaccine and some of the complications. Just kind of, I think, remind us just how difficult this is and how quickly a lot of these labs and scientists are working to try to find a vaccine for this virus. But it's a tricky one from what we understand.
Absolutely. My pleasure, Scott.
Great. Thank you very much, Dr. Davis.
Okay. Take care.
You too. Thank you so much. Dr. Paul Davis from the San Juan Regional Spine Center, my guest here on KSJE. And we're back here in the studio, Scott Micklin along with Megan Cullop on our COVID-19 local information program. And that vaccine news was really interesting that came out this week about, you know, as folks are trying to come up with this vaccine, and obviously we don't want a lot of side effects if we're going to take this vaccine, so they have to go through all these trials and find out what's happening. Oh, look at that. That's interesting.
For our radio listeners.
Yeah. I don't know where that,
okay, there we go.
Where that came
the cop
from.
Shop.
Yeah.
We just had a police seal
that
going
was
on there.
Weird.
Not like a seal, but like a badge.
Okay. Thanks.
So, all right. Yes.
Vaccine. You have a story for us.
I do.
Right?
Well, I have some more specifics.
Yes. Thank you.
On what we were talking about there.
Yes.
And so AstraZeneca, who is a company, sort of like a Pfizer, who has been working in conjunction with the University of Oxford on a vaccine, has been one of the most promising candidates. There's three candidates in the running during phase 3, which and you know, might sound a little convoluted, but basically phase three is the last phase of the trials before they can approve it and release it to the general public.
Right. You're expanding the sample to this larger population, right, right, as you try this out.
Yeah, their test subjects are broader.
Right.
And so AstraZeneca, though, what makes this vaccine unique is that they are using a modified version of the virus. And so what they've used chimpanzees to do this, and basically what makes a difference, right, is normally for vaccines you inject a small amount of the virus
that
you're vaccinating against, and that's designed to bulk up your immunity. In this case, which should make everybody feel safer, they've modified the virus so that it would be harmless to humans, right?
Thank you. So, we want that.
Right. And so they modified it to be a different type of virus, but they're using pieces of the genetics of the coronavirus.
Right.
So they're not just injecting a small bit of it. They've genetically modified it, which makes it a pretty sophisticated vaccine,
right,
of course. So,
I would go so far as saying that I think this is one of the first vaccines that's been produced in this way.
Yes.
With some of this new technology the genetic, you can dig down into the genetic code
modifying
of these things.
Yeah,
right?
It's a totally,
which
cutting edge.
Which is why
it's
happening so quickly.
Yeah, it's totally cutting edge, which is amazing. So this complication that arose, which was like a spinal inflammation.
Right.
They had one other case where that happened, but they tied it back to a different neurological illness going on. And so, I just think it's important because you're going to have a lot of people when the vaccine comes out that are a little reticent because it hasn't been tested. We've never had this, right?
It's new.
It's new.
Right.
But, this is how science works. This happens. They stop the trial immediately. They investigate to see what was really going on. They're not giving the vaccine out anymore until they crack the code on what was happening and whether it's directly related to it. So science is doing its job, I guess, is the point here.
That's right.
And that this is just how this works. It's trial and error. So, but I think it's still really exciting.
Yes.
To think that we're getting closer and closer here.
Right. But I know, we'd love it yesterday to have a vaccine. Effective vaccine.
Yeah.
But I know the longer we wait, the more folks are getting impatient and frustrated, and I understand that too. But we definitely want it to be safe, and this is the process, the scientific process that we do. And this is why what's gone on with all the other vaccines that we use, it helps our society, although it's been a lot longer in development. I mean, think about the polio vaccine and things like that. That didn't happen in a year. That happened maybe over multiple years.
This is very quick. I think the quickest turnaround on a vaccine was 18 months.
Right.
And it was the polio vaccine.
Okay.
So anyway, I'm a huge, I'm a proponent of, I always get the flu shot. It's actually, some people go apple picking when they start their fall off, but for me it's like not fall until I get my flu shot.
I see.
That's how I,
okay.
It's like get a flu shot and eat something with a pumpkin flavor and
there you
it's
go.
Fall.
Fall. Understood.
So so that's a vaccine update.
All right.
I have unemployment numbers.
Okay.
Because this is looking promising, though unemployment numbers are higher than they've ever been.
Right.
We were at 22 million, and since we've started opening up, employers have added about half of those jobs back.
From like
22
March and
million,
April, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So we've cut that in half.
And that's good, but I know, not to be Debbie Downer, but I know a lot of folks are saying that second half is going to be harder to restore because these are kind of numbers maybe from the hospitality industry, the airline industry. We heard about that a little bit in some of the news stories. And so some of these jobs are going to be harder to bring back maybe until there is a vaccine. And that's
particularly airliners. Yeah.
Yeah. And hotels and things like that. And again, our restaurants, we feel for them because we know that they've had to cut back because, in our state, they were closed for a while. And now indoor dining is reopened at a lower capacity. We can still do to-go. We can still do takeout. We can still, help our local businesses, but it's still not like it was, not back to 100%.
Correct.
So.
Oh, another business is doing a good job. Speaking of hospitality.
Okay.
Best Western.
Okay.
I'm a big Best Westerner.
Are you?
That's my first hotel I look at when I travel.
Okay. Wow, we're getting a lot of Megan endorsements today.
Yeah, and they were quality.
Were they on it?
Yeah,
okay.
They were on it. So I would say
you had an opportunity to stay at a Best Western, is what you're saying, on one of your assignments.
Yeah,
okay.
I did.
Got it. Nice.
It was delightful.
Okay.
So,
all right, everyone.
Yeah.
We're good.
So, I mean, you know, be cautious out there, and we all have to make our own decisions about what we feel comfortable with. But when businesses are taking the right precautions, this is a good thing. And, you know.
True, and they should be celebrated, and I think we should let them know that we appreciate that.
Yeah.
When they're doing the right thing.
That's right.
Just like we would do if they were doing the wrong thing. I think we're quick to complain, not so quick to praise.
That's true.
So.
And it takes one compliment for every, like, four negative remarks to build the bank back up.
Right. So there you go.
So anyway.
Supercuts. Keep going.
Great Clips.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. Olive Garden, Great
close.
Clips, Best Western.
All right.
Huzzah. Okay.
And many more,
uh-huh.
I'm sure, doing the right thing. So, great. Well, I think we're wrapped up for today, and we'll have much more on Monday, of course. We'll follow up on the numbers from the weekend. Some great guests lined up for Monday's program, so we hope folks will talk. We're going to try to talk to someone about schools, the public education department, so get maybe a statewide vision and perspective as to what we're talking about going back to school, and even more coming up on Monday's program. So we hope everyone will join us again then.
Yes. So have a good, safe weekend.
That's right.
See you then.
See you Monday, everybody. Thanks for watching. Bye-bye.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.